on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Friday edition of InvestTalk. It is July 31st, 2015. And of course, our mission, as I state quite often on InvestTalk, is to help you become a better than an average investor. That means avoiding the big mistakes that the average investor makes. Chasing returns when they've already run up, and looking for those investments that everybody doesn't like. They still have to be solid, make money, very good companies, but maybe finding bargains out there. And that means things that have been beaten up. A lot of people don't like to buy beaten up things, but maybe it's, if you want to become better than average, you can't look at it that way. Now, we're in an unprecedented period of artificially low interest rates, and we have been for some time. It's unprecedented. We've never had this 0% interest rate by the Fed. And the topic of bonds becomes a little more critical, okay, than in quote-unquote normal times. You've heard me warn you about bond funds, ETFs, and bond mutual funds because of the fact that their net asset value, the price they sell at, will be affected by the rise of interest rates and a fall, but most interest rates are going to be rising, as we know, going forward. And I don't expect it to be any huge rise, but it's just going to be harder for bond funds and bond ETFs to make money. The net asset value will go down. You'll still get your yield, but it's going to be more and more difficult. So there's a risk there. Besides a credit risk, the country risk, the market risk, the liquidity risk, there's a risk there of interest rate risk, which is the biggest risk when you're owning bond funds. So I want everybody to be aware of that. Most bond funds can diversify away from the credit risk and market risk, but it's difficult for them to diversify away from interest rate risk. How do they do it? How you can do it is keep the maturity dates short. So the rising interest rates won't affect it as much. Longer maturity date bonds get hurt more, go down in value more than shorter maturity date bonds. Bonds are complex. They're not as easy, it's not as easy as a stock. It's not. It's more difficult. And many times they're not as liquid. Of course, if you're talking about U.S. Treasuries and stuff, they are. But other bonds are not. So you got to kind of have to know what you're doing. But it is a good way to avoid stock market risk by having some bond exposure. Do you have a question on more about bonds or bond funds? What money matter is on your mind today? We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Our number is 888-99-CHART. So let's go ahead and get to the questions for the day. Let's start it off with our 24-hour listener line.
Yeah, Steve, my question today is about equity index annuities. Really, I don't understand this. Some people retired from our office, and they are saying that if the stock market went up, you make money. If stock market down, you don't lose anything. Really, something fishy, I don't understand. If you can explain me, I appreciate. Thank you very much for your help. Bye.
And that answer that you have there about equity index annuities is half right. What they are, it's an annuity attached to the stock market, usually the S&P 500. So what happens is they limit your increase in price as the S&P 500 goes up. And every annuity is different, but most of them are this way. It's an annuity that's tracked to the stock market. And let's say the stock market goes up 10% in 1 year. Well, the index annuity may only go up 7.5%. Now, they say it never loses money. Well, that's not quite right. Because if you go up 7.5% this year, and next year, let's say the market goes down 20% next year. Well, you will go down 7.5%, but you'll never drop below your initial investment. That's what it means by never losing money. Well, that does that, but you can lose all your gains. And those are the ones I'm familiar with. Other, you know, someone's going to call me up and go, well, there's this annuity for this company and this annuity for that company. Remember, these annuities are individual contracts issued by insurance companies. So they all have different twists to them. So I can't answer. I can only give you a general answer on that. But that's how they work. So it's kind of a misnomer to say you'll never lose money. Well, you'll never. It kind of is true because you'll never lose your initial investment. But if you have the annuity, and remember, annuities, you've got to keep 7, 10, 15 years. They have a contract date. That doesn't. You could have it for 10 years and make zero. That's possible. Depends on the market. Now, the good thing is the market over any 10-year period almost is always up. Always. But not always, but almost always. So, you know, it's a pretty good bet that you will have a return. My experience has been with them. I don't have any personal experience. I never bought an annuity, but I do have clients who have annuities, and they've never been too happy with them. You know, but maybe there are people out there that I haven't heard from that are very happy with them. But they are. That's how they work. I hope that helps. Despite the rise in popularity of mutual funds, many of the industry's top advisors still invest more client assets through individual securities. Individual stocks versus prepackaged funds. Is one better than the other? What are the pros and cons? That's going to be our main talking point today. So what else are we going to talk about? The Employment Cost Index for the second quarter came out today. And I think that's something we ought to address. We'll talk about the first quarter numbers and then now the second quarter numbers. Because this could be important. I also want to talk about, are low oil prices hurting or helping our economy? And, you know, it's pretty simple. Generally, overall, low oil prices means low gas prices, gasoline prices at the pump, usually means it will help our economy. But there's a big, you know, there's some problems with this, and I want to discuss the problems. And five ways the housing market is recovering. I want to talk, and particularly when I about where the housing market has the lowest and highest number of underwater mortgages. Can you guess what cities have the lowest mortgages that are underwater, and which cities, more importantly to me or more interesting to me, have the highest underwater mortgages? What cities? What one in particular? One in particular. Do you have an idea about that? And finally, best places to raise a family. Best places to raise a family in the United States. And 50% of the 60 that this survey named, 50% of those 60, and these were city, towns, and suburbs, 50% of the 60 that they listed are in California. Isn't that interesting? And so that's what we're going to discuss. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? The market was down today. The Dow down 56. The Nasdaq down 1. The S&P down 5. And, you know, it's just, the market is just stinko. It is just stinko this year. Pretty much flat. It has a little upward bias, maybe. But, boy, oh, boy, less than 1%. Yeah, on the S&P 500, if that. If even that. I mean, if you're talking to me 2 or 3 days ago, I said, no, it's down for the year. 2 or 3 days later, it's up a little bit. So market is just, you know what it feels like to me? It feels like to me it's getting ready to do something dramatic. I think we need a health-restoring correction. I think that would be very healthy for our market. If the thing it's getting ready to do dramatic is run up again, you know, with another bull leg in the market without a correction, that would scare me. That would be what I would consider a blow-off top. And then I'd worry. If we get a correction, a decent correction beforehand, I would feel much more comfortable with the market action. Because remember, I'm kind of a historical buff on how the markets move. And I know from history that, you know, if you get your normal kinds of corrections every so often, it gives health to a bull market phase. It's healthy. because it shakes out the weak hands. It you know, rotates from one sector to the next, and it's just healthy. We have been had a very narrow market, as I pointed out yesterday. Two sectors have been the biggest gainers, and they're only gainers this year, and that is consumer discretionary spending, consumer discretionary, and healthcare. The other, and there's 10 major sectors. The worst is utilities, down 10%. The other two that rose, about 10% each, the utilities down 10%, the others are down or flat. So it's just as a concern, where is the market going? So I don't know. Anybody tells you they know, they're lying. No one knows. I don't know where it's going to go. I can just tell you based on history what the probabilities are. You know, and not the possibilities, the probabilities. So the probability is we're still sitting here waiting for this correction. The longer the market churns sideways, it either is doing one or two things. It's either forming a base for the next move up, or it's showing a lot of weakness for the next move down, because it can't move up from the last time it was moved up. It stalled. One of those two directions. And you know, you just never know, because it could be the Fed raising rates could make it move down, or the Fed finally raising the rate might relieve the market of worrying about the Fed raising rates. Buy the rumor, sell the news kind of thing. In this case, don't buy the market, because the rumor is the Fed's going to raise rates. And when the Fed actually raised rates, okay, now you can buy the market because you don't have to worry about it anymore. The market is weird that way. There's a lot of psychology involved. You know, long-term, fundamentally, excuse me, the market moves up on earnings and the growth of earnings for corporations. Long-term. Short-term, it can go any direction it wants. One of our most popular investment programs is our Balanced Income Portfolio. This is a fully diversified program designed to reduce risk from any one stock, bond, or sector. As with all of our programs, one or more of KPP financial principals, me, I'm in every one of my programs, invest their own money alongside yours. So that's me. We call this parallel investing, by the way. That's what I call it. But and I do. I invest all my money, same thing, same time, same price as my clients. So if I have bad performance, if that happens, so does everybody. So I ride the market with you. If I want to be cautious, we all are cautious. So it's a good program. I really do like the Balanced Income Portfolio. It's very stable. And it constantly makes money because we have it. Its focus is income with the possibility of growth. You can find out more about it on investtalk.com, or you can check in now with your questions about any money matter at 888-99-CHART.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. I have a couple questions on my 401k.
Uh-huh.
I called the my provider, yes. An in-service rollover, uh-huh. And I was told that I've got like $400,000 in it.
Okay.
But they say the in-service rollover amount would be like $13,000.
That's all?
That's what I said. I was just wondering if you've ever heard of something to that effect, where it's like that small of an amount.
Not that small. If you have $400,000, I would think they'd let you roll over. How old are you, Art?
58, going on 59.
And they're only going to let you roll over $13,000? It's almost like a waste of time, you know. That's small.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But the other question would be, if I did roll over the $13,000 into like a 401, or not a 401, but an IRA,
mm-hmm.
would that count as a, you know, part of the $6,500 that I could put in
this
year?
No.
It wouldn't count?
Wouldn't count,
oh,
no.
Okay.
That's just a rollover.
Even though it's so even though it's so small, I'm still thinking about doing it.
Yeah. I mean, well, is it $13,000 a year?
Pardon me?
Can you do another $13,000 next year?
I didn't ask them if it's like every year, because they said that that came up on the screen, because I asked them how much I would be able to do it, when I hit 59 and a half, and they didn't know.
Yeah, see, Robert, I think you need to do a little more investigation, because I think they're wrong. I think you probably could do more at 59 and a half, That's just my opinion. You got to check that out. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate the call. What's your question today, everybody? Are you looking for a dividend-paying stock or ETFs? There are some cautions to consider. Let's talk about it. Chime in now with your questions or comments at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Some think that folks should start being more realistic about the returns they can expect when valuations look this rich. Are you expecting too much from your stocks? That's our talking point for Friday's podcast. We hope you'll be with us then.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Top producers build portfolios the old-fashioned way. This is an article on our website that you can take a look at. This is about building a portfolio with individual stocks versus ETFs or mutual funds. And the article, since the advent of 401ks and IRAs, mutual funds have taken off. And in recent years, the ETFs, exchange-traded funds, have been a huge popular choice. And these ETFs are usually a non-managed index or sliver of the market that you can buy and sell. And this article is referring to buying and selling individual stocks or building a portfolio of stocks. And you'll find that it generally pertains to the wealthy, people who have millions of dollars. They always build a portfolio of stocks and bonds custom built for them, because it's worth it for them. They can do it. It's possible to get some very, very good positions in very solid bonds and stocks, and you can build it to the customer's requirement. For instance, if the customer doesn't want to, he wants to be social or responsible investing only. Well, what does that mean? The more money you have, the more particular you can get about what you want in your investment portfolio. That's tough to do when you're buying a mutual fund or ETF. But, it is, I don't think one is better than the other necessarily. I don't. But for the smaller investors, you're almost forced to ETFs and mutual funds. And there's nothing wrong with those. Nothing wrong at all. I'm just saying that the bigger the money, the bigger the account you have, the easier it is to get proper diversification and customization. And that's basically what it's talking about. That's what this article refers to. Just kind of interesting. Let's go to Max, who lives in Half Moon Bay, a beautiful place on the coast in California. So how are you doing, Max?
Hi, Stephen. Thank you so much for the amazing program that you have. I listen every day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. My question is probably just so simple, but I am really confused about reading stock charts. Common charts that we have available, they're called adjusted closing chart, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know how they do the adjustments. Some say only for splits. Others say all the dividends and splits. So what is the truth? Which one is which? Or how do you figure that out?
When a chart gets adjusted, the most common reference is adjusted for splits. And that means stock splits, 2-for-1, 3-for-1. But also, every time a stock pays a dividend, let's say 30 cents of a dividend, they pay it today and it goes X dividend to date, the very next day, the chart will open up this price of the stock will open up 30 cents lower when they pay the dividend the night before. But you really can't notice it, Max, because the stock immediately trades, right, up and down during the day. So you don't really notice it. You think it's just a normal practice that the stock opened 30 cents lower than it closed at yesterday. But that's when they mean the chart is adjusted, split adjusted, dividend adjusted. So it's the actual price of the stock being traded right now. That's what it's trying to give you. Did that make sense to you?
Right. Yes, yes. And then looking back, let's say you look at a 10-year chart of a company.
Right.
So the price that we see, let's say 10 years ago, is really not what it was.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Exactly right, Max. Yeah, let's say that stock is trading for $100 a share today, and 10 years ago, it split 2-for-1. That means the stock should be 200 shares, $200 a share today. But 10 years ago, it split for 2-for-1, so it got split cut in half. So that's when you look back and you'll see a stock, wow, 20 years ago, that stock was selling for $1.27. No, it wasn't.
Right.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was split adjusted, and they may have split 3 or 4 times. So,
right.
So that's what that means, okay?
All right. May I ask you a follow-up question?
Sure.
When we look at the historical charts for mutual funds, does the same rule apply to them also? Do they also, I mean, the closing adjusted mutual fund prices, do they also reflect the payouts?
Yes, they do. It's a little bit different because they hold a bunch of stocks, right? Yeah. So, you know, one of the holding splits inside it, that, you know, a mutual fund, remember, trades at net asset value, whatever the value of all the holdings are. And if, so when a stock split, it really doesn't change the value. That just means you have more shares but at a lesser price. So they don't have the same issues as an individual stock.
Gotcha.
Thanks for the call, Max. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Coming up next on Invest Talk Personal, your money. I'm sorry. You're moving, but should you rent or buy? Should you rent or buy? I have this question, not rent or buy, but I have a lot of clients who are moving, retiring to some other place, and I always caution them about before they buy something. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. And that's going to be up on Invest Talk Personal. Here's how to figure out which option makes sense to you, though. There is a way. That's going to be the next, and that's in the next half hour. You can turn to us for any straight talk about investing or about money. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Carla in San Francisco. How are you doing, Carla?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Sure. I have a question about my thrift savings account. I'm a federal employee, and I maxed out my thrift savings account. And I just wonder how I should have it allocated. I'm not sure if I should have it in one of the lifecycle funds, or I'd be really interested as to what you would suggest.
Okay, may I ask a question or two? For instance, how old are you? How many more years do you have to work?
I am 45 years old. I would love to retire a little early, but I suspect I have, you know, 15 to 17 years left.
Okay, so essentially then you should be more aggressive in your, and are these the A, B, C, or A, G, F funds, or whatever the letters funds they have? Is that?
As I understand it, they have one that mirrors the Dow Jones and one that mirrors S&P, and then I think the life cycle funds are a blend of the G fund, the G and B.
Yeah, the life cycle funds are what we call, Carl, those are what we call a target dated funds. Usually they, you know, those are probably not the best ones for you to be in at your age, especially right now, because you don't want to be in bond funds necessarily. Carl, I would suggest you be in like the index funds, the S&P, the Dow, maybe the NASDAQ. Depends on what you have available. Can you send me a list of what you have, and I'll give you a recommendation as to what percentages and what you should have. If you can do that, I'll be happy to tell you. Just send me a list. Go to my website or send to me at speasley@investtalk.com. InvestTalk.com, or go to my website and click on Contact Steve, that button there. send me, it's an email. It's just send me attachment and I'll give you. It's because, you know, you're a bit too young. You got too many years to be too conservative yet. Okay?
Awesome. Do you need to know anything other than my
TSP
amounts? I can give you a bigger picture if that was helpful.
I would love as much of the information about you as possible. Where do you want to retire? How much debt do you have? What's your financial picture like? You have children that you got to support through college. Do you have to support older parents? You know, and those kinds of things will help me in seeing how much. And, you know, I just like to know exactly where you are in your life, so that would be helpful as to how aggressive I think you should be and kind of how aggressive you want to be. Some people don't like being aggressive at all. Maybe that's what you should tell me, you know, if that's something that you don't want to be, you know, and I'll adjust my recommendations accordingly.
I think that I want some of my money to be aggressive. I want to be some of it to be safe and some of it to be aggressive. I think.
Okay.
I have all, you know, there's lots of goals, so
okay.
I just don't understand the vehicle well enough, I think, to do that on my own.
Okay, I'll be happy to recommend what you should do then. I'll be happy to do that. I do it all the time for free for anybody in 401ks and thrift savings account and, you know, government savings account. So just send me the information. I'll be happy to respond to you, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carla. Appreciate it. That's Carla in San Francisco. Yeah, I do that pretty consistently for people because, you know, how do you know? I mean, if this is not your thing, this is one of the things that bothers me about 401ks and they give you choices, but then they don't tell you anything. You know, if you're not in the market, how do you know what's good, bad, or indifferent? How do you know, should you be in bond funds or should I be in index funds? And, you know, the default for most people in my mind is, since you don't know, and if you have a lot of years, just go into the index funds because over time, those have been the best performers. And just ignore the market for 20 years, 30 years, however long you have until retirement. But, you know, maybe you don't want to be that aggressive. So how do you know which funds are not that aggressive? And don't try to time the market. You know, it's been proven over and over and over and over in surveys about people investing in 401ks. The average person investing in a 401k does half as well as a managed professional account. And you just can't, because they get in and they get out and they get in and out all at the wrong times. It's hard. It's hard. So just be aware of that. The Employment Cost Index comes out once every quarter. Employment Cost Index, and this is a gauge on salaries and benefits and how much it costs for employers to run their companies. And it comes out, the first quarter of this year came out with an increase of 0.7%. Remember, the first quarter was a bad quarter. GDP growth shrank. They expected, and that was a pretty big number, by the way. So it looks like, you know, salaries are going up and, you know, benefits are going up and okay. So the second quarter came out today and they expected to be up, 0.6%, a little bit less than last quarter. Came in at up 0.2%. Much weaker. Matter of fact, a record low in any economic recovery. That means labor and employment market may not be the labor and employment market. The market for workers, the job market, may not be as strong as the job production numbers are saying. In this employment cost index report, wages only went up 0.2%. The first quarter, they went up 0.7%. This quarter, only 0.2%. Now, that is not a healthy economy, a job market, because employers are not giving wages. Employers don't feel pressure to increase wages. That must mean there's a lot of slack out there. Now, why am I even bringing this up? Well, we just had a Federal Reserve meeting this week, and in that Federal Reserve meeting, they said, well, we're going to leave interest rates alone, but we're, you know, it's going to be data dependent whether we'll raise them next time, which is in September, when the next time they meet, or in December, the next time they meet, and they're all talking about when they're going to raise it. Well, this kind of gives weight to not raising it. There certainly is no inflation pressure, no pressure in the market. The job market doesn't look nearly as strong as the jobs that are being produced, the numbers that are being produced kind of indicate. So, before their next meeting in September, they have two more months of jobs reports. One coming out late next week for July, and then a month from now for August. If those numbers are not strong, the Fed is no way going to raise interest rates in September. And the stock market will respond to that. I think the stock market's been holding its breath all year long, waiting for the Fed to raise rates, do something. And there is no fundamental reason for the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates. And remember, they can only raise rates they lend to the amount of the rate they charge banks when they borrow money from the Federal Reserve. But there's no reason. We don't have inflation. We don't have an economy that's that strong. 2.3% GDP growth in the second quarter is not that strong. So there's no inflation pressure. There's no heated economy to try to slow it down by lowering rates. But the only reason they want to get those rates up is because they want to fight the next recession. And the way they fight it, their main tool is lower interest rates to stimulate the economy when you're in a recession. That's how it's, so that's what they did last recession. Remember the huge, deep recession we had? They lowered the rates down to zero to stimulate. By this time in an economic cycle after a recession low, remember the recession low was what, 2008, early 2009, interest rates should be normalized around 3%, and they're zero. Why aren't they higher? Because this economic recovery has been so weak. So weak. That's why. They don't feel they have the ability to raise rates because they think that might disrupt the economy. And they might be totally right about that. Time for Invest Talk Personal, everybody. Should you rent or should you buy? The whole argument about renting and buying is one that this day and age has become much more acute. Okay, later in life, your home as a real estate investment grows less important, right? And renting can be cheaper than buying, especially on the coast, the East Coast and the West Coast, where housing is very expensive. Okay, so, but should you rent or should you buy? And it all comes down to what you want, number one, what you need. You know, so those are things. But what are the rewards of renting? For one thing, you know, you can always change residence. You can go someplace new. Check out a new area. If you're thinking about moving away, you want to retire someplace else, you can go rent there and see if that's what you like. No, I don't like that. Rent for a year, go someplace else. Oh, do we like that? Okay, like, then you can buy after that. Gives you some freedom. If you want to follow the grandkids, which is what I hear a lot, well, before you go out and follow your children and they're having the grandchildren there and you go move there, make sure they're going to stay there. Maybe you should rent for a while. Just make sure in case they move, your children move away again with the grandchildren. Now, some of the reasons that people want to own, and a big reason I think, is because of the emotional reason of being comfortable in your own property. You can do what you want with it. You can change the color of it. You know, whatever it is. You can do your own planting, change the landscaping. Whatever it is to make you more comfortable. And that's one reason why you want to own. But if you're doing it from a financial point of view, there's not, you know, sometimes renting is cheaper. So think about that. I can tell you this. When you get to retirement age, you generally want to be where your children and grandchildren are. But don't just pick up roots and buy someplace new where they are. You may not like it where they're living. You may not like it. And, you know, try to go there when the worst time of the weather of the year. That would be my suggestion. Not the best time, the worst time. See how you can. For instance, I lived in the East Coast when I graduated from college, and I thought it would be pretty neat. So I moved back there for my first job. Lived there for, 7, 9 years, something like that. And I really did like to change the season the first year. I was from Southern California, you know, where it's always sunny. And I thought, well, I kind of liked it. Rain, snow, cold for 1 year. 8 years later, I'm still there. I didn't care for it. Also, I had trouble getting used to the mosquitoes. I lived in the northeast. I don't know. Mosquitoes love me. When I'm outside, I was like swarmed on during the summer. Couldn't handle the humidity either. So there's things, you know, when you retire somewhere, you got to think about that stuff. That's InvestTalk Personal. I'd like to know what you want to talk about. Maybe you have a topic that you want me to go over. Be happy to do it. 888-99-CHART, or you can write me a note. Click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin at InvestTalk.com.
There's a link to today's talking point. Just look for the Friday, July 31st heading on InvestTalk.com. And now it's time to ask that money question. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Bobby calling from Atlanta. What do you think about Sandex International? The symbol is S as a sand, X as a zero, I as in India. It's a small company, but it's very diverse, and that's what I like about it. But I'm not sure expensive or right now. Look forward to your answer on the next show. Thank you. Bye.
Standex International Corporation, XXI, is not a foreign country or foreign company. It is out of Salem, New Hampshire. Manufactures food surface, air distribution, hydraulics, engineered products, also offers engraving services. They're making $4.50 a year this year, up 7% from last year earnings, and then $5.17 a share next year. That's up another 15%. It's growing its sales, you know, maybe on average 7-8% this year. P.E. ratio is 17. 5-year range is 8 to 20. Not very much debt, hardly any debt. Management owns 3%. It's a $956 million company, so it's a small cap company, almost a $1 billion company, but still small. No dividend to speak of, 6%. Good return on equity. It's a good, solid company. 17% return on equity. Good, solid company. Mutual funds are neither sellers nor buyers. So, and they own about 50% of the company, mutual funds. So it's a good, solid company that's growing its earnings, have been growing its earnings year after year after year. So it's a decent company to own. I might want to find some catalyst that will push this stock higher, because I don't see anything as I'm reading this, what might make it go up, you know, other than it's a good, solid company. It's not cheap and it's not expensive. So I think it's come down from 82 down to 74, has a lot of support right at 70. So if you're going to buy it, this is the kind of the area that you would want to buy it, but I don't think you should expect that much from it either. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Are low oil prices hurting the economy? And the overall answer would be no, it's not. But I want to get into some details about it. Some details. What these lower oil prices is hurting a lot of workers in the oil industry and the related industry in oil. So I want to get maybe some more information about that out there. Don't think it's all good news. It's not. We still have a few minutes left. I'll do my best to answer your money questions in these last couple minutes. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Legendary money manager Peter Lynch explains his own strategies for investing and offers advice on how to pick stocks and mutual funds to assemble a successful investment portfolio. And there's more. Look for recommended books on InvestTalk.com.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Merrick in the Bay Area. How you doing, Merrick? Merrick, you there?
Is this Hello?
How you doing, Merrick?
This is Larry.
Oh, I'm sorry. It says Merrick here. Larry, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, I watch the volume and accumulation and distribution on my charts.
Uh-huh.
But you mentioned that mutual funds were neither buyers or sellers of that stock you just talked about. I wonder if there isn't a better place to look for that information.
For accumulation, distribution, and volume, or mutual fund buyers?
Mutual funds, but I don't really, I'd want to know where the money's going, wherever it's coming from.
Yeah, that's why I mention it, because mutual funds are pretty influential on stocks if they're buying it, or accumulating, or distributing it, and that's why I mention it, you know, most of the times when people ask me about a stock. And it's very difficult, Merrick, to get that information. It's not out there just free on the internet somewhere. You have to buy it. Okay?
What about my broker? I have Fidelity. They have a lot of places. Do you think they would
have Yes, it? They would have that information. They would. You can ask them.
All right.
Okay. Yes.
I was also wondering about something you said about the banks. Not about the banks, about oil, and about how lower oil isn't always good. I was wondering if it is going to be a big drag on the financial system
It probably won't. But talk about it probably won't affect the banks necessarily, but you know, oil companies are going to cut this year $29 billion in capital spending, and that's going to take off 0.7% off our GDP for this year. So don't think it doesn't hurt. It's hurting. You know, the oil price is being cut in half in the year over year. It's hurting. It's hurting. You know, it's hurting both our. Chevron just announced 1,500 layoffs this quarter. ExxonMobil, all by itself, cut $1.5 billion in spending this quarter. So that hurts. You know, so it's not all good news, especially if you're in the oil industry. And those are good-paying jobs, Larry. Good-paying jobs are being cut. You know, so.
Probably Caterpillar too, with all the slowdown in China and that sort of thing too.
Yeah, another area that all these lowering of copper prices and iron ore prices, it is good overall because it keeps prices for you and me down, but it's not good for the industries they're in and the employees that are in those industries. So it's not all good news. It's really not, but . What can you do? It is what it is. Larry, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Also, I haven't talked about housing in a while in the foreclosures and housing underwater and where are the problems. So where do you think is the place, the one city in the United States that has the worst loan-to-value situations where properties are underwater, meaning the mortgages are higher than the value of the property? And the number one city for that is Las Vegas. 39% of the homes have negative equity in Las Vegas. The next city is Orlando, 32%. Detroit, 31%. Jacksonville, Florida, 30%. So there's where the areas. So Vegas is still having trouble. What are the best areas where they have the least homes underwater? Boston. Austin, Texas, Oklahoma City. Now, the one city that's not on here that I thought with the least properties being underwater, the least, one city here, and I'm just curious what size of cities they're looking at. Shouldn't San Jose be on here? Or maybe San Francisco? Think about the huge values, the Bay Area in general. You're telling me the house prices have skyrocketed, and so their values, those houses probably none of them are underwater. I mean, some of them are, but you know what I mean. How come that's not on this list? I find that interesting. Anyway, so maybe on next week we'll get to the best places to raise a family. Half of the 60 cities they listed are in California. We're out of time for today. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening today. And I hope you have a great weekend. Let's meet again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.